It's a moment where I know that I am called to add up what I have learned from all of these little experiences and people that I've gotten to meet. And in each of these moments, I feel like the Spirit is telling me, pay attention here, use this, add this to your knowledge, and then walk along the path where I'm guiding you.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. A few months ago, I went to the One America Movement Summit in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I met so many people who are committed to peacemaking and community cooperation. Sometimes that meant between congregations of different faiths, and sometimes it even meant peacemaking within a single faith community between people who thought differently than those literally just across the aisle from fellow believers in their own chapels. One of the people who immediately impressed me is our guest today, when she stood up to introduce the theme of the conference, which was Rooted in Faith. Chandra Dinap Wettstein is the Chief Operating Officer at the One America Movement, a national organization building a united American society by eliminating toxic polarization. She's currently a seminarian at Wesley Theological Seminary.
I grew up as a military kid, so we moved around a lot. And my family of origin, we started as in the Catholic tradition, but really my mother said, we're going to go to whatever church has the best music. So every time we moved around, it was like we're going to different places, Episcopal, maybe Methodist at a few different places. So I got a little bit of different flavoring for Christianity all across the country, which was very cool. But really, the real turning point for me was whenever I was in college. I experienced a pretty negative relationship breakup, and I had not been attending church, as probably a lot of people drift away during their college years. And a friend invited me to the inaugural service of an all-lay-led worship service in the library of a United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, Broadway United Methodist Church. Big shout out to all the folks at Broadway. This worship service was led by all different people who had been outcasts from the church more traditionally. There were people who had been involved in the civil rights movement. There were people who were involved in the earth justice movement. There were gay and lesbian folks there. There were transgender folks there in Indiana. It was just this beautiful collection of folks, mostly older adults. And I just was really brought back to life by these people who society would have said that as a young woman with her whole life ahead of her, successful in college, relationship status, all of these things would have said that I was in some way superior. Yet these people were the people who treated me with such dignity, who asked me hard questions about God and about my faith journey. And they really listened to the answers in a way that made me realize that I had worth and I had value. And that was really what brought me back to the church and really taught me just where I was called to be and where I needed to be in the midst of people who may be on the outside of society. And so that really launched me into some of the work that I did in international development. And all along, I felt like God was whispering in my ear, just saying, I have something that only you can do. And I ran away from that for a long time.
You and Jonah, that can be a little scary.
Yes. I finally acquiesced and started seminary in 2020. So it has definitely been, it's been a gradual unfolding of a journey. And so I'm very lucky in that regard. So at the One America Movement, we believe that the crisis of toxic polarization in the United States is not just a crisis of our democracy, it's not just a crisis of our society, but it's actually a spiritual crisis. Mm-hmm. Meaning that when society is teaching us to hate our neighbor or to think that they are evil or that they are hateful or that they have to be stopped at all costs. That actually damages us from the inside out. We can't be the people that we are called to be in our faith traditions when we are holding those views of each other. And so I think as we were planning for our summit in Tulsa, we decided on this theme of rooted in faith, the idea being that if we can root deeply into our faith traditions, into the values and the core tenets of our faith, what we learn through scripture, what we learn through our traditions and our faith communities, that we can actually stand strong in those values and at the same time reach out to other people across our divides. So just thinking in this metaphor of a tree standing tall in the forest, it's strongly rooted.
Yes.
Its trunk is strong and holding up those branches that are reaching out and creating a canopy with the other trees. And so just like that, we should be rooted deeply in our faith so that we can create this canopy of security for our broader community whenever we reach out to people who are different than we are.
And I was really struck by two things. One was that image of all of these strong trees together protect themselves when the gale force winds come.
Yes, they break the wind for each other.
Which
absolutely.
And what you just said about getting back to core tenets. In the initial training that I went to for all of the first-time attenders, and two or three things that I wrote in all caps in my notes was, we have the answer to our problems already. It's in our faith traditions. We have to, as you said, get rooted in them and get down to them. And I think people are saying, what do we do? And looking for something new. But you're saying, it's already there if we just tap into it. Is that right?
Our faith traditions have been teaching us how to live in community for thousands of years. So we don't need an app. We don't need some new program. And actually, it's not the One America movement that's going to come in and help people solve this big problem. We don't need another nonprofit organization telling us, here's your five steps to healing your community. We have that already built into our faith traditions. And so it really is a question of how do we get back to the core? And what if we lost along the way when we've allowed these kind of gale force winds of polarization to push us left and right and everywhere in between?
Could you give me, I wonder if you could tell me about some times when you've seen that happen, where people were able in their communities to draw on their own values.
So I have a couple of stories that I've been thinking about. One is a participant who engaged with our Matthew 5-9 Fellowship. So this is a program that we have to support evangelical pastors and Christian leaders across a number of different kind of parachurch ministries and institutions to help them support their communities to put their identity in Christ above their political identity. In this particular instance, our team was working with a professor out at Vanguard University in California, Dr. Eunice Kung.
Yes.
We work with neuroscientists and social scientists to better understand the science behind how polarization plays out in our society. And then we work with faith leaders themselves to take the tenets and scriptures and values of the faith tradition, and especially the language of our own faiths, and how do we apply that to what we know from the social science. And Dr. Kung had participated in some workshops with our Matthew 5-9 Fellowship. She was really struck by some of these ideas around how Christian peacemaking can actually help us in our politically polarized time. And so she devised this idea to host a debate watch party and worked with Matthew 5-9 to develop a bingo card that would help her students identify when there was polarizing language and when there was healthy language being used throughout this watch party. And over 100 students came to this event, and they played this bingo game together. And since then, she has used these same concepts in her class, and the students of Vanguard have started making Vanguard students as peacemakers stickers and sticking them all over the university. And so this is just one of the examples of where someone has identified that actually a core piece of our faith tradition is to be a peacemaker, and how can I take that and apply it to what's happening right now in society?
So just having that bingo card would, I think, raise so much awareness about these words, just helping to define what is polarizing and pulling people apart from each other, and where are the opportunities to work together?
Absolutely.
You said something really important. The America One movement does not exist to swoop in and fix your community, but that you train people within faith communities to use their own resources and to partner with others. And just what about in my own neighborhood, just in my own little church or whatever it might be? What are things that you suggest that can be helpful to people to make a positive difference?
I like to speak in the language of my own faith tradition. You know, at One America, we have staff members and board members and participants who are from a range of faith traditions and political ideologies and racial and religious backgrounds. And we want to make sure that people speak in the language of their own faith tradition rather than trying to say some universal thing that ends up saying nothing. And so for me, as I'm thinking about what are the elements of my own faith tradition that can drive us towards peacemaking and towards eliminating polarization, one of the first things that I think about is how I can get curious about finding the image of God in each person that I meet. One thing that I learned way back when I was at Broadway United Methodist Church in that little all-lay-led worship service is that too often society negates the image of God in people, and that actually we need to get curious and ask questions and draw closer to people so that we can really find where is the Imago Dei in the other. But right now, society tells us, do not do that. Society is telling us that we should back away, we should write off people who disagree with us. But instead, I think the thing that really draws me from my faith tradition to come closer to people is that I am called to see the image of God in each and every person that I meet, and that I must, absolutely must, see the image of God in people who disagree with me.
In that moment, when someone is saying something you think that's maybe not even based in fact, and you want to just say, clearly you're not a reasonable conversation partner, and what is it you do in your head, in your heart, to stop and see that image of God? How do you do that?
The first thing we should probably all do is pray. So can we just pause for a moment and just say a little prayer? Help me to see the image of God in this other person that I want to reject in this moment. And then I like to ask a lot of questions. How did you come to care about this issue? What makes you believe so strongly about it? What makes you doubt your own side? If you could change the conversation around this issue, how would you change the conversation around it? These are all questions that we use in our guided conversation training that we do with people. And these are questions that get us away from assuming that if I just tell you the facts, that you will change your mind. Instead, it's a question of how do I get curious about the other person and their experience of the world? We might not actually see eye to eye, but maybe I can start to understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And maybe I cannot feel so much rage. I think right now so many people feel rage against people who disagree with them. And so the more we can understand each other, the more that we can lower that temperature.
I went to a community meeting once at a local college, and a woman burst in the door late, like 20 minutes, huffing and puffing, interrupting the whole meeting and loudly saying, they need better parking here, they need better maps. And I felt myself not liking her. And in fact, thinking, well, maybe if you plan better and get here a little early. So when the meeting ended, I found myself starting up this long set of stairs up the hill to the parking lot, and I realized I was walking next to this woman. Now, my impulse was to get past her as quickly as possible, but something said to me, remember how you're supposed to see Jesus in everyone. And I wondered how I would find him in her because she had been so rude, but I saw that she was having to stop and rest every 5 steps or so, and then continue, although still mostly out of breath. So for whatever reason, I decided to walk with her at her pace. That meant we had quite a while to converse as we climbed the hill, and I felt bad for having judged her because whatever physical problem she had still made it to the community meeting and had been willing to walk down all those stairs from the parking lot and then walk back up them after the meeting, even though she knew it would be difficult for her. So by the time we'd arrived at the parking lot, my feelings about her had changed completely because we had had time to visit, and I realized a few of the challenges she was facing. I love not just out of hand dismissing, it's those crazy whoevers, because that's such a broad brush, and it includes people we love, or we would love if we knew them better.
Oh, yes.
There was one participant in the conference who said, I do love the idea of interfaith cooperation within our communities. But she said, what has affected me most lately has been intrafaith. People in yes. my own community who now are mm-hmm, dividing. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. not those other people. It's within our own community and saying, no, you guys are the wrong. In the wrong. You're nodding your head, yeah. So I'm thinking you have seen yes. this happen.
One thing that became clear to us pretty soon after I started with the organization was that there were a lot of faith leaders who felt like they could come to these activities, they could do this cross divides work, but they couldn't tell their people, their congregations, that they were doing it because they were worried that people would not understand. Why are you talking to those people? Or why are yeah. you working with those people? So we started efforts of faith work where we can help the faith leader to address the dynamics that are putting our faith communities really in this pressure cooker of polarization right now. And so really our work is two parts. One is helping faith leaders to shape a healthy community for their own group. How do we help people to speak up when their own group is tending towards the extreme? How do we help people speak up whenever someone has been sucked into mis and disinformation, for example? Mm. And then we help people come together across divides. And if you have that good foundation, then you can bring your community along to build those relationships, not just at the leadership level, but also with the congregations too.
You have spent time in the Peace Corps, also working with marginalized populations in various countries, with the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Child Labor and United Nations Development Program that was in Bhutan. All of these, you said God was leading you to something specific. How have you felt, or how do you perceive that sort of guidance or inspiration? I think it might be a little different for each of us.
I spent probably 15 years in the international development space. And I worked as both a funder, essentially, within the Office of Child Labor, Forced Labor, and Human Trafficking at the U.S. Department of Labor. So we gave grants to people doing child labor eradication projects, and I would go out and monitor mm-hmm. those grants and engage with people. And then I moved over to World Vision, where I worked on child labor, youth engagement, and then spent 4 years working on a 5-country wheelchair provision and disability inclusion program, where I got to be the program director. And I would go out and engage with people. And I remember sitting in the back of, I think it was a police station in northern India. And we had asked people in the community to identify folks who needed wheelchairs And usually these people would be teachers or pastors or other faith leaders, people who regularly engage with the local community and may come across folks who need wheelchair services. But on this particular occasion, I was sitting with five young men, probably late teens, early 20s, and they shared with me that they had been walking for miles around their community, knocking on doors, looking for people. They weren't simply a teacher in a classroom who said, oh, yes, I know this child over here might need a wheelchair. I can connect this child's parents to the program. They were like literally walking around looking for people. And I was a little befuddled. I said, you're young, you've completed your schooling, like you could be doing anything else right now. You could be looking for someone to marry, or you could be starting a business, or you could be going for different education opportunities or a job. Like, why do you spend all of your time doing this? Thank you very much, but why do you do it? And they said, these people live here. They belong to us. And we didn't even know they were there because they can't leave their homes.
Wow.
And so I just was so struck by the fact that these young men would take so much of their own time to care for their community in this really tangible way that we would not do in my community here in the United States outside Washington, D.C. If you need something, you should go to the services or contact the county or tell your school and they'll help your child. But we don't have the care of community, I think, that I saw over and over again whenever I was working so much abroad. So I think your initial question, actually, Steve, was about how God is whispering in my ear. And it's just moments like that that I just felt the Spirit say, pay attention to this. I am telling you something right now. Mm. It's a moment where I know that I am called to add up what I have learned from all of these little experiences and people that I've gotten to meet. I was in El Salvador once, and I had a woman take my hand, and she said, my children went to the United States 10 years ago, and I haven't heard from them since. Can you help me? And I was in India another time, and I had a mother take my hand, and she had this tiny child, and the child looked probably 18 months old, but she told me that he was a child, not a toddler. And she took my hand, and she said, my child's dying. Can you help me? And I found out only 2 months later that her child did pass away. And so these are the stories that I am privileged to carry. And in each of these moments, I feel like the Spirit is telling me, pay attention here, use this, add this to your knowledge, and then walk along the path where I'm guiding you.
Oh, thank you for sharing those. Those are also difficult when you may be able to help a little bit, but not always to the degree that you'd like to.
Yes. And I've made the mistake before of saying that I could do something when I couldn't. And I carry that too. But it's also a part of learning and knowing that we're not God. And that's one thing that really drove me out of working on international development programs is partly because I felt a little like, who am I to be going abroad saying, here's how you should do this thing, this essential service that you know very well. You are out there walking around looking for the people who need wheelchairs. I should be learning from you. I should be taking that back to my own community, which is how I ended up coming back and turning to focus on domestic work and find the One America movement, because I wanted to take what I had learned from abroad back here instead of thinking that I have all the answers because I have the money. And that's just not true. Mm.
Chandra, I wonder what things specifically make you feel the most connected to God or the divine?
I have three kids, and my youngest still loves to snuggle and read books in bed together. And that's maybe sounds like a cop-out answer,
I don't think so.
But watching our children grow, like there's nothing like it, right? That would be the first thing that I would say. I'm a consummate introvert. I'm a little socially awkward. And I struggle in a large group.
So of course you're a worship leader.
So you would think, oh, how is that? How is that true? But if I'm on the dais, I'm okay. It's whenever I have to stand around at a cocktail party that I feel a little awkward. But all of that's to say that having deep conversations with people that I care about are the places where I feel connected.
What have you learned, or maybe do you know, or do you experience with God now that you didn't 20 years ago?
I recognize my own limitations a lot more now than I did 20 years ago. So I think my relationship with God has definitely become more messed up again. Could you come and fill in the cracks a little bit? I always picture the beautiful Japanese art of broken items that are filled in with gold. When I'm praying, I often envision a beautiful bowl or a beautiful piece of jade filled in with gold in the cracks. Mm. And I'm like, please make me something beautiful because I'm broken again.
Hi, it's me, Humpty.
Yes, right.
Many thanks to Chandra Dinap Wettstein for speaking with me. This episode was produced by James Sturtevant. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Alexander, Heidi Hansen, and Heather Bigley. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Lauren Sandberg, and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Subscribe to our YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith. Tired of feeling overwhelmed by conflict in your life? Learn the skills to confidently handle any conflict on BYU Radio's new original podcast, Conflict Coach. Certified mediator Dr. Emily Taylor coaches real people through real conflicts in their lives. From family struggles to work disputes, neighborhood conflicts to in-law disagreements, each episode of Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor gives you strategies to find the root of a conflict, identify solutions, and create positive change. Tune into Conflict Coach on BYU Radio or wherever you get your podcasts.